email ray@rte.ie. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
The legendary Don Baker joins us in studio. He has a guitar, he has a couple of harmonicas, and he has himself. How are you doing, Don?
I'm doing great.
Yeah, good to see you.
It's great. Lovely day today. It's brilliant weather. Oh. It's like a summer's day. Good to be alive.
But you get, it just changes people's attitude and their humour.
It lifts the spirit, you see.
Yeah.
It's great.
I was looking at your age and I'm looking at you now. You're looking good.
Thanks very much. People keep telling me that. I don't know what they're expecting to see because I'm 75 next birthday.
Are you?
Yeah. I don't know what they expect. Look fantastic.
Thanks. I'm 75 next birthday. No, I'm not. I've just turned 60. Yeah, yeah. So I suppose people then go, what's your secret, Don Baker? What's your secret?
I don't know. I mean, it wasn't, I don't really, I mean, I do a lot of meditation. Maybe that's something to do with it.
Yeah.
I don't know, really.
You haven't drank in a long time.
Oh, yeah, I haven't drank in years in a long, 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 long time.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, it's just great to be alive.
And you're doing something you love doing.
Great to be here today.
I'm doing the list here, Don. You're doing something you love doing.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, I love music.
Yeah.
I'm still doing it, still playing away, and it's great.
Yeah, so this new show is slightly different in that it's stories and song, is it? Because you were asked questions at one of your shows and you decided to tell a few stories. Is that it?
Oh, what happened was I was down playing in the Theatre Royal in Waterford and somebody shouted up a request and I played the request and I said, anyone else? And then there was another one. Then I said, anyone else want the song? And someone shouted up a question.
Right.
So I answered the question. I forget what it was. And then there was another question and another question. And what normally would happen on a concert would be I'd go on the second half and play maybe three songs on my own and then introduce the band back on stage. So when the question started, it went on for 35, 40 minutes. And people were really interested to know, like, all these questions. And it got really personal as well. But it was jovial and it was very lighthearted. And it was great banter with the audience and the crack was 90. And I really enjoyed it. And I said it to, I didn't think any more about it. And I said to Barry Gosler, my manager, I told him the story. Oh, it was great. And he said, he's always thinking, Barry, you know, you need to do a one-man show.
Yeah.
So he's been trying to convince me for the past 6 months to do it. And I said, okay, I'll do it. I'll do it. So
that's what I'm saying. It's songs and stories.
Well, most of my songs are autobiographical. So, you know, it's a no-brainer, really.
Mm, yeah.
Yeah, I kind of do it already when I introduce a song when I'm doing a concert. You know, I say what the song's about and, you know, but I'm going to have to probably, I suppose, elaborate a little more, you know.
Yeah. Well, a bit of a script to work around, you know. You'll have to have something, a bit of a plan, will you? Or will you
I just improvise.
It.
Like,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's funny, I've just written a new song called The Blues Man. I think I'm going to do it today. And one of the lines is, my whole life's been one big jam. You know, and that's the way I go through life. I've no, I don't have any plans. And I try to live my life as much as I can without expectation, you know. And it's not to avoid disappointment. It's just, I feel much freer when I don't have expectations.
But you see, people say that a lot of the time people are upset, sad, because of expectations. Because we've been brought up in a world where we've been delivered all these things that we should want to achieve.
Yeah,
and then we don't achieve them.
We're in control, but we're not really. I go on the spiritual kick, you know, and I let go, let God. That's what I do.
Right.
You know, and things always turn out a million times better than I could have dreamed of when I do that.
I'm going to come back to that.
Okay,
right?
Okay.
Because I want to talk to you about other things. But the album is Don Baker and special guests. So you have Sinead O'Connor, Finbar Fury and Christy Dignam. So tell us a little bit about the recordings with Sinead O'Connor and Christy Dignam.
Well, I can't really... First off, Sinead sang a song I wrote with Damien Dempsey called Woe to the Holy Vow. It's an affront to the Catholic Church, being honest. And she was mad about the song. So we done a video and I played a part of the priest. It's on YouTube. It's called Woe to the Holy Vow. And Damien sang it great and so did Sinead. And after that, then I was driving her home. We were in the car and I played one of my CDs. And she heard a track that Mick Poirot recorded called The Blues Junkie. And she was really impressed. So she said she'd love to do a bit of work with me. So I gave her a few CDs. she listened to what I called Chains at the time. She changed it to Cinderella. Aye. She said she'd love to do that song. So we went into the studio and she recorded that song. And then she wanted me to produce, she wanted to go on the blues vein. So we'd done about five tracks and then she went AWOL.
Right, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And she'd done a Bob Dylan song, a Nina Simone song. I said, she's done one of my songs. I forget the other two. We're down in Al Cohn's studio in Stony Batter in Dublin. And then she just kind of went AWOL and she went back to the pop thing.
Yeah.
Which I was kind of, being quite honest, I was disappointed.
What a voice.
Pardon?
What a voice.
Oh, she's brilliant. Yeah. Absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just think she was a great person. She's done a hell of a lot for emancipation and, you know, she great courage, ripping up the thing of the Pope, the photograph of the Pope that time. I mean, Jesus, that took some courage to do that, you know.
Yeah.
And she just had to be admired. She was a great great spiritual warrior.
She was.
A great person.
And Christy then as well, Christy Dignam, Rain on the Wind.
Yeah, is there. Christy. Well, I started playing when Aslan were just, I met them when they were only 17. And it was really funny, you know, the leather jackets. They looked like, they all looked like the Fonts, you know, in Happy Days.
Happy Days, yeah.
Yeah. And, but they used to drive me nuts. Like, I was on the road and I had that song, Winter and You, was out, I think, at the time. So I was doing four, sometimes five gigs a week. The Length and Breadth of Ireland, travelling.
That was your biggest hit.
Yeah, so yeah. I had Monday and Tuesday off. But they'd ring, Dom, we're doing a gig, can you come down? And then he wrote me into rehearsing with them. They had a pigsty out the airport. And that just went on and on. And then I'd written this song, Rain on the Wind, and myself and Christy went in. And I think it was a first single, both his and mine.
Right.
So I actually have the vinyl of the single.
Oh, do you?
In a glass case and of the photograph of the that was on the sleeve of me and him. Right. And I have it displayed in our hotel in Brogans. It's in the bar. When you come in from the reception, it's just at the right there. If people visit, they can see it. And so we recorded the song. Then I was doing a gig live at the Olympia. It was being filmed for video and CD. And Christy came along and sang it live. And so I wound up on the album. I thought,
yeah.
It's kind of like just a tribute to him, really.
Another great voice.
Another
as
well. Great singer.
Yeah, another great singer. You know? Yeah. From the heart, always from the heart. And back to Sinead, of course, that first song you talked about, which was in front of the Catholic Church. And you were one of the first people, because we're listening to Liveline, it's difficult to listen to, but important that people hear it. Over the last 2 weeks after the O'Toole report. But you were one of the first people to come out and say that you'd been abused at the hands of the clergy in Ireland. What year was that?
I'm going to guess now. I would have been around 88.
Right.
87, 88, 89, in right. around then. I was doing an interview with Gay Bourne on the Late Late Show. And I don't think I had intended to talk about it. It just came up. And I think I shed a little tear or two when I spoke. I didn't realise I'd been that badly affected by it, being quite honest. Yeah, and that was the first time. But nothing happened after that. Like, no one from the government or from the clergy or from any got in touch with me.
And you can you remember how you felt saying it out loud and saying it publicly?
I felt terrible. I felt walking around the streets, I felt naked, if that makes any sense. I felt like everyone could see me, you know. And guys were just wishing me well. They beeped the horn and give me the thumbs up.
Yeah.
But I was kind of cringing. Oh, Jesus, you know. I felt, I just felt exposed.
Okay. And then when you were vindicated, I suppose, not that anybody needed to prove that what you were saying was true, but the Ryan report would have vindicated your story and the stories of many other people who'd suffered.
I'd like to pay tribute right now to Mary Rafferty.
Yeah.
She done the documentary States of Fear. And that's what really did it. Mary was, she was like brilliant, resilient, and she was adamant to get the truth out there. Mm. And she was great with us victims. She was very caring and kind and considerate and didn't push us too hard and let us talk if he wanted to talk.
Mm.
And she was brilliant, Mary Rafferty. I must write a song and give a tribute to her now. I must do that.
Yeah. I'm just wondering, like, I don't know if you're listening to Liveline or not, or whether you're listening to news, reading the papers about the most recent report, and people now are telling their stories like you did back in the that all those years ago for the first time on national radio. And I'm wondering, you know, how do you think they feel? Would you have anything from your experience that might help them?
Well, it takes a lot of courage to come forward. And you see, it's so hard to believe. It's really hard to believe that a priest would do such a thing.
Mm.
But the thing that shocked me about this latest revelation was the abuse of special needs children.
Mm.
That was that made me sick. Like, oh, my God. You know, whatever about, well, I shouldn't be saying what, I don't mean whatever about, but children in industrial schools and orphanages, yes, they have parents, but their parents aren't around. They don't have anyone to turn to.
Mm.
But special needs children, that's like, that made me a bit sick now, being honest.
Yeah. And how did you come to terms with the whole thing? Because you seem to be in a happy place now.
I medicated with alcohol.
Initially, yes.
Yeah, and I didn't realise that's what I was doing. I didn't know that. But in effect, that's what I was doing. And I'm not making excuses for drinking heavy. This all came out in therapy. Subsequently, I've done 20 years of therapy.
Right.
And funny, Ray, I used to think I'd go in and get rid of the anxiety, get rid of the anger, get rid of all the so-called negative emotions. You don't get rid of it. You learn how to deal with them. And that's probably more valuable than getting rid of them, you know. So you just learn how to. One of the things that affected me, both mentally, physically and emotionally, was the panic attacks, the anxiety attacks. And they were quite horrific. I started having them when I was only about 15, when I was in Dangan. And they didn't stop until I was around 35.
Right.
But I learned to heal them using a mirror. Looking in my own eyes and telling myself I was okay. It was only fear coming to the surface. Because you feel like a volcano. You feel like you're going to die. You're going to have a stroke or a heart attack or a brain tumour. It's quite terrifying.
Yeah.
And and the other thing that happened, actually, how I healed the panic attacks was I took a bad one day. I was with my son. I couldn't even walk. And he helped me around to the doctor's surgery to get some tablets like Valium or something. But when I got to the door of the surgery, I put my hand on the handle and I said, I'm not taking medication. And when I left the surgery, it was in Blessington Street in Dublin. By the time I got to the pavement, all the symptoms had gone. So I was thinking, I don't know how that happened. I was saying, how did that happen? Like, and it was only in hindsight, a few years later, I had accepted. It was acceptance. So, you know, and I've learned so much since, you know, hug your demons or they bite you in the ass. It's the avoidance.
Hug your demons or they bite you in the ass.
Yeah, right. It's the avoidance of emotion that causes all the neurosis.
Hmm.
If we could have suffered legitimately as children, we wouldn't be neurotic, but we weren't able to feel our pain. You know, there's five natural emotions. There's love and fear, there's envy, and there's anger, and there's grief. I was born 1950. I wasn't allowed to feel any of them. Not even one of them, you know? And so, like, Sir Tom Brawl is pent up emotion.
So you weren't allowed to be human in a way?
You weren't allowed to be human, no. Yeah. You couldn't admit to being afraid.
Right.
You certainly could not cry. You'd be told, I'll give you something to fucking cry about.
Right.
You know, is what you were told. So, you know, big boys don't cry. We just have nervous breakdowns, heart attacks and strokes.
Okay, well, as I said, you're in a happy place now.
Yeah, it's great.
It's great.
I mean, it's. I'm so happy. Like, I mean, I've dealt with all this stuff, thank God. I mean, it took a long time, but I have.
And I suppose the brilliant thing for people who maybe listen to you who've gone through similar things is that you came out the other end.
Yeah, just I'd like to give them hope and just say, you know, don't be afraid to talk to friends. And, you know, what they need is validation. So don't talk to people who will invalidate you. Talk to people who will just listen, you know, and even nod their head like you're doing right now. And just give them validation. And that's all we needed as children. It's never too late.
Never too late, right. What are you going to sing for us first? I know you're going to sing two songs.
I'm going to just go over here, so I'll have the chair and seats. Give me a second.
Yeah, fine. Don is touring as well with his one-man show. And we'll give you the dates. And the album is Don Baker and special guests. And they are Sinead O'Connor, Finbar Fury and Christy Dignam. Ray.
Thanks, Ray. Yeah. This is
Text 51551, The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
We're chatting away to Don Baker. Don is starting a tour. It's next year, Don, March 22nd. I'm just seeing Wexford Arts Centre there, 29th, Mode Theatre, and then you're all over the place. Nina Arts, The Pavilion, the Traveller's Friend Theatre Royal, and then you've Cypress Avenue, Roisin, Dove, Dreacht, Blanchardstown, Mermaid Arts Centre, and more to be announced very shortly. The acting thing, Don, did you stumble into that? Was it somebody made an approach to you, or did you go looking for it?
No, someone. What happened was I used to play in a place called the Speakeasy in Dublin, Temple Bar, before it was so popular. And Daniel A. Lewis and Jim Sheridan used to come up to watch me play. And I used to go for coffee with them and stuff. And they used to say, you need to do a screen test. And I was saying, yeah. And never dreaming. And then Barry Gasson, my manager, phoned me one day and said, Jim Sheridan and Daniel A. Lewis want to see you over in Kilmainham Jail. And they want you to play a part in a film. I thought, oh, here we go. Gonna have to get the head shaved, playing a harmonica in a prison cell. This is what I envisaged.
Yeah.
So I went over and it was really funny. He handed me the script. He said, you're going to read for this guy, Joe. Go for a walk around in the garden and then come back. And we're going to, you know, get you to read the script. So, okay. I'd never read a script in my life. Like, you know, I mean, I read 3 and 4 books a week nearly. So, like, I'm really a good reader. Anyway, so I went down and I come back in and he brought me in the room. I'm there with Daniel Day-Lewis. And I'm like reading like a kid. Did you say anything? You know, absolutely terrible.
Yeah.
And he just snapped the script off. He said, improvise. Tell him what you'll do to him if he tells the Brits anything.
Right.
So I just, okay. So I grabbed him by the lapels and I was spitting in his face and everything. And I was saying, oh, fucking kill you. Did you tell him? No, it was really going hell for leather on it. And I thought it was to play the harmonica, right?
Right.
So I kind of stop after a minute or two and I look, they're all out, their mouths open. And I say, do I get to play the fucking harmonica or what, you know? So they just start laughing. And then he it was really funny. He sent for me down and told me he wanted to play this part of Joe McAndrew. And so that was okay. And then I got a call to say that, no, I wasn't playing it, that Gabriel Bourne wanted to do it because he was the producer. And then I said, I'm okay with that. And he gave me a minor role. And then he come back again and said, no, Gary Bill's gone to Canada. So you have to do it. So that's how
I wound up doing it. So you had it, then Gabriel Byrne had it, then you got it back.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I never heard that part of the story.
Yeah.
In the name of the Father.
But I don't really like acting.
Right.
Why
not?
The penny dropped. I can make a living being myself.
Oh, yeah.
I don't have to act. But the last film I did, I was up in the Dublin Mountains. It was with Dan Aykroyd or Robbie Coltrane. And I was up in the Dublin Mountains and the walkie-talkies wouldn't work and the mobile phones wouldn't work. So we had to sit in the car, the back seat of a car for 3 days. And I said, that's it, I'm not doing this.
Give me my harmonica, please.
Give me my
Thank
harmonica,
you.
I'm out of here. And then, of course, when the pandemic happened, there was no gigs, there was no work. And I got an offer from Fair City.
Yeah.
And I was going to do it. My wife, Maureen, said, you should do it. Like, you're doing nothing else. So then I did that, and then they wanted me to write me into the series, and I said, no, I'd be doing gigs. So I think it was a punishment. They cremated me.
Yeah, but you died first.
I died. Yeah.
it wasn't straight to cremation.
Yeah.
What are you going to sing for us?
But Barry says, I recorded this song yesterday. It's called The Blues Man. I'm forever trying to come up with new guitar styles.
Right.
Because we've been doing that the last 100 years. So I'm going to try, it's really for a band, this song, but I'm going to chance it now.
Just, so it's first time heard anywhere outside of your room.
Be, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so anyway, it's autobiographical. It's called The Blues Man.
Wow. That's great. The story of your life in a song.
Yeah.
Started playing harmonica when you were 8, 9, 10.
I was only a kid, yeah. I was in the hospital and I had TB and there was a guy a couple of beds away and he had a TB. He was an adult. He had TB somewhere in the back end of the spine. So all he could do was read a book or play a harmonica. It's madly, the tellies then were black and white. There was no colour telly. Yeah. And we'd one telly and it was in a lounge up at the front of the unit. So we didn't get to watch that much. Anyway, so yeah, I heard him play the harmonica and I asked my mother to bring him. And I think the sound, like most kids are attracted to like shiny drums or red guitars. And with me, it was the sound got to me. So I think I was probably feeling lonely.
It's a plaintive sound, isn't it?
Yeah, it's real lonely and lonesome.
Yeah.
And yeah, my mother brought one up to me and I proceeded to drive everyone nuts. You know.
And you've been doing so ever since.
Yeah.
We're also lucky to have Don Bacon in our lives, says Stephen. And thanks so much to Don Bacon for this wonderful interview. It will resonate with so many people, says Paul in Dublin. What a great conversation. Men like this should be invited to talk to students in schools. Nothing like real life experience to be able to talk from the heart. I remember Don played in Limerick in the late 90s. Brilliant he was. I'm wondering, has he plans to play Limerick soon? Thank you, Mike. Well, a big tour next year with the One Man Show, Songs and Stories. And the album is out now. Don Bacon, special guest. Always good to see you, Don. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Ray. Thanks for having me.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.